Alright, we're starting. Can please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Jason Wee, and I'm the co-creator of Tangsu, Sean Tobin.
What was the stimulus or the inspiration behind this production for
yourself? Stimulus. The stimulus behind this really was a conversation with Sean, where he's checked out my writing and asked me, hey, you know, there's a chance of working with TNS. And would I consider writing something? And actually, we've collaborated in some ways before. Yeah, because I was a photographer for his previous production with the previous Fringe Festival, and I had done the photography for both the publicity as well as the rehearsals, and thought a little about how he works and seen how he worked. So there was a natural entry point, you know, partly from my own curiosity. And then that initial familiarity developed into a kind of ambition to see if I could somehow work within a way of thinking, which is very different from mine, you know. Yeah.
I noticed that my line cut into yours. Could you just say it one more time, your answer?
the
beginning part, it did, yeah.
So the beginning of the stimulus of behind the production was really when Sean checked out my writing. And subsequently to that, Sean asked me if I would like to work on something together. And this is actually not the first time that we've collaborated. We've worked together on his previous production for the Fringe Festival, which is What Did You Learn Today? And I was the photographer for both the publicity and the rehearsal. And I had a chance to, okay.
Did you have a theme or a central idea that helped the concept together in your creation process?
I think one of the questions that when were asked between the two of us was how much could be expressed, if you had the chance to say anything you want, but also conversely, how much could you express if there were things governing your expression, if there were things holding down what you can or cannot say, or if there were some kind of, boundary, but also some kind of bond that ties up your voice somehow, which then eventually lends us on, I suppose, the answer to your next question, which is the morgue. In some ways, we land on this idea that your body is the vehicle for your expression, but it's also your limitation. Yeah.
It's a good bite.
Okay. Could you just say that one line without referring me to my question, because I'm supposed to not be present in the... I'm an invisible figure.
Okay.
Yeah. So... Okay.
So which that. Lends us, so one of the
okay, Jason, hold on. Give me a sec. Okay, I will just say the question and then you just answer the question. Why the
idea?
You
need the first line, is it?
Yeah. To help bridge and edit.
Bridge into the why we use the morgue.
Yeah. So why the idea of the morgue?
It's actually harder when you plonk me that way.
Okay.
Did I say plonk? Yeah. That's a Aussie-ism, isn't it? It's okay. thinking about the bonds and the bounds of expression then leads us to the idea of the morgue in our discussion. And the way, it leads us to the image of dead bodies. A body as the vehicle for your expression, but also its limitation.
What were your main artistic or theoretical influences, especially on this work?
Well, I'm going to say it. It's, you know, Sean. And it's kind of odd to say, it's kind of odd not to say that in this collaboration, more than it is odd to say it. Because more than any book I would read or any music I would listen to or any other collaborator in this process, he is the person that I spoke most to. And he's the person that I would have the most fights with. And he's the person that I also then subsequently have the most silences with. And he's then also the person who would then respond back with an equivalent scene, you know. So the chief antagonist for my writing really was his writing. Then, of course, there were other things that that were on my shelf that I was reading at the same time. I knew that Sam Shepard wrote a play also called Tongues, which is also a collaborative work. Among, you know, other writings that I read. And I tend to read widely as I tend to write widely.
Can you share with us more about your craft as an artist?
I have, as some of the people around me would say, no craft as an artist, only a certain kind of bravado and hubris, because it is not as though I've written a play before this. I just think I want to. Someone gave me a chance, and I will repay that trust with if not an equivalent trust, then the best that I can master, you know, which is that if the person could be excited to risk something with me, then I would trust that what I can offer is vulnerable enough, it's interesting enough, it's open enough to criticism that this could actually work. Yeah.
In your practice as a visual artist, did that help in your writing at all? Did you use any, like, as a photographer, we have some usual set ways to get us into the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything from your visual arts influence the writing, or was it just something completely new?
No, I actually started out writing first before I did photography.
Okay.
So in a very recent conversation with Mary Lowe, she pointed out that the first time she met me was actually with Elfian as very, very young poets to be. Okay. Yeah. So
can I ask maybe another question that might be a bit more relevant? Because you were writing and also looking at design and installation, perhaps a better question is, did it affect your writing differently, knowing that you were also designing in some way? I mean, because you're wearing different hats, right? And
I think I would say that I think it might look differently outside my own head than the way it looks from the inside. So the way it looks from outside my own head, I assume, you know, I can't say unless someone tells me that and that the process of writing is very different from the process of visualizing, or that the process of putting words on paper is very different from putting ink on paper as a drawing, or very different from putting, a silver solution and developing that on paper. And inside my head, what I see actually, or at least how I experience it, is simply different experiences of time, that certain things gestate differently at different speeds, and then certain things have their own times of emergence, and then certain things also occupy different spaces simultaneously, or at different distances. So in my head, I often hold a few things together at the same time, so that some process might be dominant, other process would be recessive, but both will be ongoing. Which is to say that while I'm making photographs, part of me is actually thinking still as a writer. And if I write something, part of me is still thinking as a photographer. And if I make an installation, two parts of me will be thinking about something else. And if I write poetry, one part of me will be thinking about the city that I would like to turn this into. So as I'm writing the piece with Sean, part of the writing really is in the engagement with him as a person, then him as a writer, then him as a challenge to me as an artist. And all of these things happen together in such a way that as I write, part of my head thinks about the design, that is in some ways an entirely independent process, that when I write, I don't think this is going to be how it will be staged in the installation. And then as I think about the installation, I think, well, this is just how it's going to look as a set, rather than how the writing will be performed in that set. And again, back to an earlier question, it is really the kind of conversation that has developed between Sean and I, that in the kind of tension that exists between two such different people, that the way for certain things to move forward is to in some ways allow two independent things, that in fact when we try and merge into one very closed entity, where if we try and master between us a single vocabulary or a single grammar or a single visualization, even on something as simple as a photograph or publicity, it tends to crumble. That it in fact works best when he goes, "What do you think?" And I say something completely different, and then he says something completely different. And between the two something completely different things, we try and make something work.
What would you say are the main artistic challenges of this production?
Making something work between two very different things. Yeah. And perhaps it is my naivete with the other.
Sure, sorry, can I say? Because we don't hear you say the question, we have to incorporate the question into the answer. That means, right?
Huh?
No, what happens is that because I know that this question is linked to what he's mentioned, so I brought forward this question, I'll go back to this.
I know, but what I mean is that statement now is not going to make sense on its own without you saying one of the biggest challenges of this. I don't know if that was the problem when I spoke.
Please don't make me do that.
No, is it just what you just started to say now? Doesn't he need to say one of the biggest challenges?
I know, please don't make me do that.
But then it won't make sense, that statement alone. I don't know if that was a problem when I spoke as well.
No.
Okay, shut up. Keep it. Sorry.
Yeah. I'll just repeat the question again. What were the main artistic challenges of this production?
The process of making something work between two very different things and two very different people. And I'm not sure whether it is my naivete with theatre, although I have a love affair with naivete. that it is often the best way to fall in love with something. When you don't know it so well, or when you don't know the person so well. And I think that challenge exists in some way more for theatre than conventionally in art making. At least the way art making is conceived of as a hermetic studio practice where an artist works alone in a room. Theatre typically is in that sort of process.
Okay. Is there any aspect or idea from this production that you wish to develop further in subsequent works and why?
There are things that I enjoy in the writing that will continue to intrigue me. The certain kind of glossolalia where languages can appear together and only some of them are understood. And that it is perfectly acceptable not to have any of those things translated. That something about a resistance to translation that I find incredibly pleasurable. That there is sometimes a utility to not knowing and rather than knowing. And there are, of course, other aspects to the writing, you know, between certain sections where voices work almost as a chorus against singular voices that appear, between characterization and a kind of almost disembodied monologue, you know, and between narrative and moments of performances that are almost without narrative. They just exist as like just stream of words. So these are things that I think a writer would be interested in, whether or not it's a playwright or a poet or a novelist. And so I'm interested in those things. And then there are other aspects that I enjoyed in the design of it, that would have borrowed from my existing work, that I continue to work on anyway, you know, the kind of imagined, melancholic, other city or other place, that I actually think it's not utopian in the way that it exists only in the future or as an ideal, but exists now, exists in the present, that people are dead, people are dying, parts of them are dying inside, parts of them are already dead. There's a place, there's a city also called Singapore that darkness exists, where melancholy is truly alive, where it can get really cold, even though it's really hot and humid. And these things I continue to think about anyway. It's not something special to tongues, yeah. But it's not something that I could leave tongues out of.
Did you have a target audience in mind? And were you consciously trying to communicate anything to them?
Target audience. Old women, very old women, old men. Young men, young women, gay boys, gay girls, very gay girls, very gay convent girls, very gay boys who are fans of theatre, and religious people, very religious people. Very religious people who wear crucifixes to theatre performances, they know they'll get offended by. Theatre critics, theatre non-critics.
Is there any particular audience feedback you would like to respond to?
I really enjoy responses where, actually, Sean just mentioned this to me in on the way here that someone read the script and this is the perfect response in whatever intonation. So I could try a few. The one that Sean gave me is someone going, "Wow, this is really fucked up." And then the other intonation was, "This is fucked up." And the other one is, you know, "This is fucked up." And I like all three.
What were some of the artistic main challenges of this production?
There is, in some ways, Sean's process is very challenging. Sean wanted an open collaboration among all participants in the process, you know, which would include lighting designer, sound designer, cast, then there's me as co-writer, and then there's me as the visual designer. And all of these requires an expense of time. And sometimes I think even with an expense of time, there's still a chance of, a great chance of failure. And the chance of failure could lie in technical aspects. You know, we had very ambitious plans coming from the sound designer for how to create live sounds in conjunction with what happens on stage. And some of those plans we could not realize. There are non-technical challenges, which is more about how to sustain the independence and the vitality and the necessity of, you know, five or six different, you know, independent designs and ideas, yeah, coming from each of those collaborators. Yeah.
What were some of the creative solutions to any of the artistic challenges? Dirk, live sound.
I just mentioned it. Oh yeah, which is that we like one of the big challenge. But I could elaborate. But one of the big challenges is, you know, Dirk, the sound designer, had wanted to play instruments in accompaniment to the performance on stage. But because he was also at the same time the person controlling the sound booth, there was the challenge of, well, who's going to adjust levels and who's going to work the sound that was actually coming out live from his, you know, guitar, for example. So so in some ways, Dirk only, I think it's just to say that he really figured it out as we go along, rather than something that we figured out prior to opening night. Yeah. So the creative solution really in this regard was making mistakes. Yeah. And then after that realizing, oh, okay, we have to do something differently. Yeah.
Did you have to change the set design? Do you have to respond to the fact that this place happened in very different episodes and they were kind of mixed up? So did that influence the set design?
I think it affected the lighting design in interesting ways. Sam took up the challenge of creating these. I created a set which is essentially programmable, depending on how many, and it can be as variable as any number of channels that we could specify. So we could specify a few channels and have fewer options, or we could specify many channels, which we did, and then have a variety of options. And Sam really took to that when he knew that he has these many lighting channels to work with, which then also allowed him to create these different motifs, lighting motifs, which could be identified with certain dramatic action, which we then could signal to the audience that, well, even though it is fragmented, certain things recur, and we're going to signal them with the way certain lighting appear, certain lighting motifs appear and reappear. Yeah. So, for example, the most simple and the evident one is the thermometer. You know, the temperature is shown. So that motif is used to signal the fact that you are back again in the mall. But there are other sorts of motifs that appear that he's designed, which I find quite beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, done for now.